Welcome to Season 9, Episode 19 of the Ubuntu Podcast. I'm Martin, it's Tuesday the 5th of July and we're going to be discussing what's been happening in the news and the community. Joining me this week are Alan.
Hello, hello.
Hello. Laura.
Hello.
Hello, and Mark.
Hello.
How is everyone?
Yes. Awesome. Frightfully English from the sounds of things.
Where could that be? It must be the tea.
Yeah.
Well, should we get on with it? Should we find out what Alan's been up to?
Yes. So recently, it's been announced that the latest thing to appear on Netflix is Star Trek Voyager. So I started watching it because I've never watched it before. So
oh,
I
really?
Thought, yeah, well, I've watched the odd one, you know, when it happens to be on TV. I've never religiously watched it. And I think that makes me less of a geek, apparently, in some
circles. Have you watched the other Star Treks in general?
There are other Star Treks. I thought there was just Star Trek Voyager. I'm kidding. So my favourite, and this is going to get me hate, I'm sure, is Star Trek, is the one called just Enterprise, the one with Scott Bakula.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
I did. That's the only one that I actually religiously, obtained and watched. Like,
well, that's fine. I imagine it's quite enjoyable if you haven't seen the others.
My favourite is Voyager.
I can see why people like Voyager, and I can now catch some of the memes that people have said about about Riker and Picard and stuff. So I'm now picking up these things from like 20 years ago or whenever it was.
Voyager's not that old, is it?
Voyager doesn't have Riker and Picard.
No, I'm now confused which one you're watching.
What? Really?
I think he did that.
The next generation is Riker and Picard.
Is it next gen? Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, whatever. Shows how much I know. I'm watching the one with Riker and Picard. I just saw a beautiful. Big Star Trek button and I pressed that and it played episodes back to back. No idea what it is.
Basically, they put all of the Star Treks on there at once. So that's probably why you might have thought that, oh, Voyager's on there, and then maybe that's why you thought you were watching Voyager.
Oh, good. I don't feel stupid at all now.
Next Generation's the only ones I've watched either. I used to watch them on BBC Two on a Tuesday night before Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Yes, I think I probably did that too.
I did quite like Return of the Jedi, though. That was quite good.
Yeah, that's the best Star Trek, in my opinion.
Laura, what have you been up to since last time?
I've been to Sweden and Denmark.
Ooh.
Yes.
Wow.
Did you go on the bridge?
I did. I got a lift across it in a car on the way across, and I got the train back on it. And awesome. Then one evening we had dinner at the end of it.
Which bridge is this?
The bridge. If you've not watched The Bridge, then you won't know.
Oh, I see. There's a program called The Bridge.
If you don't know The Bridge, duh.
Orisrund, I think it's called, something like that.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that the one with Picard on it?
Yeah, that's the one.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, yes, so I went to a conference there and a bit of holiday.
Those are both lovely countries. Denmark and Sweden are lovely places. It's very nice over there.
Yeah.
Was it warm?
It was very warm at the very beginning, and then after that it was just warm and alternately dry and damp.
How's the tan?
Not different from when I went. I was mostly in a lecture theatre.
Ah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. It was good. We should probably get on.
Yeah.
And now it's time for the news. And first up in the news this week, the AMGPU Pro driver for Linux has been released.
Is that a good thing?
Yes, because this means that I can buy a new graphics card and then upgrade my Steam box to 1604.
Oh, this was the thing that everyone was ranting about when 1604 came out, that it didn't have the latest AMD driver and, oh my God, catastrophe. Yes?
Couldn't you have bought a new graphics card 3 months ago and just bought an NVIDIA graphics card?
I could have, yes.
1604.
I could have, but I didn't. And so now I have the choice of whether to buy an NVIDIA graphics card or buy an AMD graphics card. Because the thing is, because I'm using an AMD APU, I might wait a bit and see if they do an APU, which is supported by these by APU? These drivers. This is that's a CPU and a GPU on one chip.
Okay.
But I might just buy a more powerful graphics card anyway, because
so is this new AMD GPU Pro driver not compatible with your existing hardware then?
Indeed not.
Uh-huh. Oh, do you have an old crusty card then or something, or is it?
It's well, to be fair, the support for old, well, more than a couple of years old AMD GPUs has never been great. They do tend to sort of move on and stop support. Well, it's not they stop supporting them, they just, you know, they don't, like you'll have some sort of old driver which it's hard to get hold of. Under the old model of drivers anyway, it might be easier now under the new scheme, but you'd end up having to get some legacy package from some weird archive or something.
So now that you have this new driver, does this mean like everything is great and you support all the latest features and, you know, any brand new game you buy will be great and all that kind of stuff, just like it is for NVIDIA users with their binary proprietary driver?
I guess so. I mean, this is like it was for AMD users with a binary proprietary driver and their up-to-date graphics card.
Right. So this is
the difference here is all the stuff in the kernel is open source, and then this is a bit of a binary blob sitting in user land which does all of the secret source.
Mm. And this does support all the new bells and whistles. Notably, yes. Vulkan is now supported with this driver.
Although you have to install a Vulkan SDK alongside it as well. Which isn't, that's a bit of a faff because that's downloading a self-extracting thing as well.
Who's going to want that anyway right now? I mean, what is it? I mean, Vulkan 1.0.
I suppose the point is that developers might want it, which is why it's only available through an SDK.
Right, exactly. So it's not really a big deal that you've got to.
Yeah.
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 Mm, well, there we go.
So, yes, we'll see how that goes and how support comes in for other devices.
I'd be interested to hear from our listeners if any of them have modern AMD GPUs and have tried this driver and what experience they've had, and that would be interesting.
Especially the experience of installing it, I'd be interested in hearing, because the experience of installing AMD drivers in the past has just been a complete nightmare. So hopefully this will fix that.
All right, what's next?
Mozilla has announced that they've given their first round of funding to mission partners as part of the Mozilla Open Source Support Scheme, and they've basically given $15,000 to the NVDA screen reader because it's kind of part of the Mozilla mission to make it accessible, make the web accessible.
Or keep the web accessible.
Keep the web. I don't know. Yes.
So long as you're running Windows. Yeah, that particular project is Windows only, unfortunately.
Yes.
What, NVDA?
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, that sucks. I mean... I looked at this and I thought, well, that's good. But then I thought, well, hang on a minute. Why are they like pulling back from all their own internal projects and just giving money away to other people instead? You know, the fact that they're not especially keen on supporting Thunderbird, as far as I can see, they've dropped Firefox OS. Okay, they're still working on Firefox, the web browser, for multiple platforms. And they have other projects on the go as well, like Rust and Servo. I can understand why, you know, as a project you'd give money away to projects that you use, that you consume as part of your project. But Mozilla doesn't consume Tor or Tails or Kaddy, and none of these projects are consumed by Mozilla the project. They may be complementary, maybe. I'm glad for those projects that they're getting funding from Mozilla, that Mozilla's got this big bucket of money it can throw around, but it just surprised me, that's all.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, that 1.3 million could probably have kept Thunderbird going, I'd have thought.
You'd like to hope so. And I did mention Rust and Servo. There was an article about Servo Nightlies now being available. You had a look at that, didn't you, Mark?
Yes, I installed it and had a brief play around
with it. What's Servo?
It's the new hotness. So this is the new browser engine written in Rust, which is supposed to be like super slick and amazing programming language.
It's the new hotness, Martin.
Thank you.
So yeah, basically it's just a very basic browser with this rendering engine that you can download, and it takes about 30 seconds to start up at the moment. And then it's very buggy.
So I remember seeing this around it at FOSDEM like 18 months ago. And in the Mozilla room, you know, they have a dev room, and they one of the developers was evangelizing about Rust and Servo and how they were putting a lot of focus on it, and gave a couple of demos, and it was, you know, it was the kind of demo where people were applauding and cheering at the fact that a window rendered a Wikipedia page. You know, it got applause because it was just instant, and they were clicking links, and the page just appearing. Like, it was like, you know how when you view an image in an image viewer on your local machine, you press left or right to go to the next image. It was just like instant, just like load and render straight away. It wasn't.
Well, that the build I was playing with didn't do that at all.
Oh, it just so felt they like had a regression in the last 18 months.
It just felt like using a web browser, which rendered things a bit strangely. It didn't feel like super fast. I don't know if I don't know what I was expecting.
Maybe it's
to do with my network connection as well.
Because it was, you know, absolutely the kind of thing where, you know, your hair gets blown back and, you know, there's like wind rushing out of the computer when it's rendering. It's that fast.
Wow.
Maybe not. Moving on. Software Heritage, an initiative is seeking to collect, preserve and share publicly available software. And that launched just last week. They're seeking collaborators to help build a curated list of all archived software. It's currently got source code from various places, including Debian, GNU and some public GitHub repos. And they're looking to keep these things synchronized as time goes on.
So is this like archive.org, but for open source software?
That's how pretty I much. Understood it.
Yes, that is pretty much exactly what it's like. They have some interesting things. It's not complete yet, so you can't just go there and start browsing around all the software. Mm-hmm. They've started archiving some software, so they've started pulling in software. And one of the interesting things they do is that they create a cryptographic hash of every object that they pull in. And if you you can go to their website, and there's you can go to softwareheritage.org/archive, and you can, if you've got a piece of software, you can do the SHA-1 sum on a file, paste that SHA-1 sum into their website, and see whether they already have that file or not. And so the example they give is like they have a SHA-1 sum of one of the files from the Doom 3 video game, and you know, if you paste that SHA-1 sum of that file in, you can see, ah yes, they have got that file in the archive. And they're building an API so you could query it and find out if they have particular files, and they will track the timeline of those files and all that kind of good stuff. But not all that stuff is done yet. They're looking for help with increasing the coverage of what's in the archive, getting provenance information from where stuff came from, the origin of stuff. They haven't got the ability to browse the stuff yet. So it's not like archive.org where you can just punch in a URL and, you know, you can browse the pages. It's not quite like that yet. You can just interrogate it and find out if the file is there, but you can't actually browse it. They also want to do a full text search and also make stuff downloadable. So much like archive.org. Yeah, it's an interesting project. Yeah, it's all free software.
Be interesting to see how that develops.
Yeah.
I did the SHA-1 thing. The desktop thingy that I work on is in there. I was pleased to see.
It is in there.
Mm.
Cool. So yeah, keep an eye on that.
Yeah. Next up, Lenovo ThinkPad management, system management mode has an arbitrary code execution 0-day exploit. So this allows an attacker to disable the flash write protection and infect the platform firmware and disable secure boot and bypass virtual security mode on Windows 10 Enterprise and other, in air quotes, evil things.
Is it called virtual secure mode? Because it's not really secure. They just want to break it.
It's like, it's virtually secure. Now, so what was curious about this, Lenovo did have an advisory up about this, but that page has been taken down. So that was odd. And this proof of concept is posted up on GitHub. We'll have a link in the show notes. And originally, the researcher posted that it affected ThinkPad laptops from the X220 up to the T450S, all with the latest firmware applied. Yeah, you must be pleased as punch to
encompassing,
hear that.
Encompassing
is that
both
all
of
your
laptops?
Laptop?
Yes. Encompassing both at the bottom end and the top end of the ThinkPads. I agree. Yeah.
You can download the stuff and test it, and people have been doing that, and it's now been found that at least one HP Pavilion model is affected and a whole range of Gigabyte motherboards are affected. And this is because this code was some sort of reference code from Intel that's been copy-pasted multiple times. So I think how widespread this is, it's very early days and it remains to be seen. But, you know, this is if you get some nasty bit of malware on a Windows machine, the opportunities to do bad stuff have just, you know, taken on a whole new level. And there's nothing, of course, that the operating system can do about this.
So is this at the firmware?
Exactly, yeah.
So is this another argument for having free software firmware, like from the bottom of the stack all the way to the top?
Yeah, something like Core Boot. Although, you know, if this bug existed in Core Boot and that same implementation was cookie-cuttered into multiple different bits of hardware, then, you know, this vulnerability would exist everywhere. You know, this is, you know, effectively what's happened here.
So does this need each manufacturer who's put this in their hardware to release a firmware upgrade and people to know about it and know how to upgrade their firmware and do it?
All of those things.
And it does support something other than Windows for anybody not on Windows to do it.
Yeah, because of course sometimes it's difficult to flash firmware on Linux unless you've got one of these spanky new NUX, and it's super simple, thankfully. It's one of the best things about them.
One of the best things about it is how easy it is to flash the firmware.
Yeah, because you have to, because the NUX get firmware like every month. It's brilliant. And they
live in the dream there, Martin.
Yeah, yeah. Unlocks new facilities. Yeah, it's great. They're probably vulnerable to this as well. I have to try it.
Although, to be fair, I do remember flashing the firmware on my digital video recorder, my Humax digital video recorder, over a serial cable. And so, you know, there are times when it's quite fun to like flash firmware. And yeah, I appreciate the nerdiness of it.
And finally, a photo has revealed that even Mark Zuckerberg tapes his webcam and microphone for privacy.
Yeah, well, this was funny. It was some kind of promo photo of Mark Zuckerberg sitting next. It was like a impromptu photo taken at his desk, and it just happened to capture in the background a picture of his Apple laptop with tape over various parts of it. And, you know, you think if he's worried about those kind of things, you know, shouldn't we all be worried as well?
The story we had a few weeks ago about his password hygiene probably suggests that maybe not completely.
And taping his microphone isn't going to help an awful.
I guess so. Is that the end of the news?
I think it is.
And now it's time for some community news and events. So last show or the show before, we talked about the announcement of Snaps being supported across a range of key Linux distributions. And so the development team are now work on Snaps and Snapcraft are now making Universal Snaps one of the main topics for the next sprint in Heidelberg, Germany, which takes place on the 18th to 22nd of July. And if you want to be involved, you know, say you contribute to other projects and you want to influence how this goes, there are a limited number of places that you can apply for.
And yeah. We'll
put a link in.
Yeah, this is I'm going, and so is Martin, and some other people from various other projects. And I think they want to encourage participation. So that could be remote participation. You don't necessarily have to come along to Heidelberg. But, you know, participate in various ways, or come along if you live down the road. If you're in Germany and, you know, you can come along, then get in contact. There's a form in the blog post, a link to a form that you can specify whether you can come under your own steam or whether you want to apply for sponsorship to come along. We've already invited a few people, but it'd be good to get some more people along.
A few tour away those days. Is it going to be a me and Mark show again?
Oh, God.
Well, Last time I went away and I was able to record by balancing a microphone on top of two pillows. So I think we can probably arrange a similar kind of arrangement, especially given me and Martin are sharing a room in the hotel.
Pillow cast.
Yes. It'll be very cozy.
I'm now imagining you two lying next to each other in bed with the microphone in between you.
I think we might have to create that image for you.
Yeah.
I think so. This has got to happen.
Okay, moving on.
Okay, then.
UNAV, the mapping and routing application, has added an offline maps feature. So you can download maps and use it if you've got a Ubuntu mobile phone and you want to use the mapping with no internet connection. You can do that.
Ooh. It says you can download maps from any map server.
Yeah, it's quite flexible, the UNAV. You can use tiles from, you know, some other server if you prefer one server over another, one tile set over another. It's quite flexible.
What defines a map server?
So when you're in any mapping application, most mapping applications, the little squares that load in the map, I don't know if you've noticed when you drag, the little squares are the tiles, and there's a server somewhere or a bunch of servers in the cloud that have those pre-rendered tiles, and when you zoom in you get a different set of rendered tiles. Most mapping applications do that, and the tiles are all held on a back-end server and they cache some locally, but some of them actually render them on the local machine. They get map data and they render them in real time on your local machine, but most of them have a map server. And there are a bunch of services, there's one called OpenStreetMap have one, and a bunch of others, where you can, you know, point your browser or point your application at their server and you get the tiles delivered from them. And they have different benefits. Some of them have layers, some of them have different colors, or, you know, they highlight particular things like cycle routes or different use cases.
I've got a cycle one like that.
There you go.
Oryx exactly maps. Like that.
So, UNAV has got an update in the pipeline as well, for which we're hoping to deliver this week, which will also give you a converged view of maps, which means you can run the same UNAV both the phone and on the desktop and get mapping app on the desktop with routing and stuff.
Is UNAV a core app now?
It's on the phone by default, yes.
Excellent.
Mm. Ooh, next up, Flatpak has landed in the Ubuntu 16.10 archive.
Ooh.
Okay. What's Flatpak? So
Flatpak is another universal packaging format.
Oh, good.
Yeah, we mentioned we talked a lot about Snappy last time. We had a long discussion about that. Flatpak is the rename of XDG app.
Yes.
Wisely, they renamed it because XDG app was not a good name, whereas Flatpak sounds a bit better in some people's opinion. And it's now in 16.10. So you could, if you're running Ubuntu 16.10, you could install Flatpaks on 16.10.
So after the long discussion we had about snaps last time, what really struck me is how we didn't have enough packaging options.
Yeah, there's at least eight others that we haven't mentioned. There's loads. There's Nix, GUIX, and there's
auto package.
App image. There's loads. There's a ton of these. Some of them have been around for a long time. So you know, whenever I see a post online which is snaps versus Flatpak, it kind of does a bit of a disservice to all the other guys who've been doing this for so long. You know, there's a lot of other competition in the market for.
Epson and other printer drivers are now fixed in Ubuntu 16.04.
Excellent.
So there was an issue whereby the LSB core package had changed at some point in the history between 14.04 and 16.04. And most Epson drivers and some other third-party drivers require LSB 3.2, and consequently those drivers were not installable. And that package has been reworked to add the necessary support, and you can now install your printer drivers again. And this was sort of highlighted by a very wrong YouTubing troll who made a whole video about how terrible Linux was, and he's mostly citing the fact that he couldn't get his Epson printer driver to work because of this issue.
It wasn't Linus Torvalds, was it?
No,
he's
not
always thinking about how his printer doesn't work.
Yeah, I saw that video. It was. It's a shame because, you know, everyone, to be fair, everyone has their thing that irritates them about Linux and, you know, their thing that might cause them to throw their laptop out the window and, you know, or, you know, install Windows on it, both resulting much the same. And you know, his wife can't print her stuff because it doesn't work. And I can see how frustrating that can be when you buy a device and it should work and it doesn't, which is a shame. But will good to know it's fixed.
Will this affect HP?
I think asking HP's been fine. I think generally speaking, the HA printers have been fine. It's definitely Epson, and I forget there was one other brand that I saw, but most of all, it's Epson. Either Epson printer drivers that are in the archive or the Epson printer drivers that are only available on the Epson website as Debs require this fix.
Right. Yeah, I mean, HP themselves do quite a nice line in open source drivers stuff, but it's not perfect. Hence my question.
Super. What's next?
In more Snap and packaging related news, Snapcraft 2.12 has been released. Did I say Snapcraft? Snapcraft.
You did.
Good. yes, and it's making its way to your 1604 machines today. What's this mean for us?
So Snapcraft is a really useful tool that allows you to package applications as snaps. So it's the thing that makes the snaps. The developer would use Snapcraft. And one of the things when you're creating a snap is there's often parts that you need that somebody else has already figured out how to package. So rather than you have to reinvent the wheel, what they've added is a kind of ecosystem of parts where you can run Snapcraft update and then you do a Snapcraft search and it shows you all the parts that you could reuse and you could just include those in your project. So for example, if your project is a GTK app, then you could incorporate a part that will put all the necessary GTK things in your, or okay. If it's a Qt package written in Qt, then you could incorporate a part and it's just one line in your Snapcraft URL that you would need to incorporate that part and you don't have to do all the work, the heavy lifting, because someone else has done that for you.
Okay, cool.
Which is really, really, really useful. I used it a couple of days ago. I made a little video called Let's Play Snapcraft and it was like a play on the old Let's Play Minecraft. And I used a part in the creation of a snap for OpenTTD, which is a game. And that just made things an awful lot easier. And it made my video 20 minutes long instead of being like an hour long. So I found it very useful. So yeah, it's good. Moving on. There is a post on how to classic apt based Ubuntu 16.04 LTS on the Raspberry Pi 2. What's all this about? Running 16.04 LTS on the Pi 2?
So, way back in the 1410 time, Ryan Finney made an image of the Ubuntu 1404 server as an unofficial image, you know, with a proper kernel and all the rest of it. And this sort of passed me by because there is an official canonical made image of the Ubuntu server for the Raspberry Pi 2 that you can download from cdimage.ubuntu.com.
I missed that too. I didn't even know there was such a thing.
Yeah, I was surprised. So there's somewhere in the build system, there is a thing that makes this, and I want to find out more about who created this thing and how I can get involved. It's a card image. You stick it on your SD card and you plug it in your Raspberry Pi 2 and you have Ubuntu 16.04 LTS server running.
Sweet. That's really cool because then you... that's super interesting because then you can... snap install loads of server-based stuff. I like the sound.
Yeah, there's an awful lot you can do with that.
Right. And in more snappy news, you can now host your own Snap Store. So as we discussed last week, Canonical host a catalogue of snaps in the Snap Store, which you can install through either through the Snap command line or through the Ubuntu software app. But Brent Barker has now published an open source Snap Store on GitHub. under the Apache license. So this is just a minimalist version of a Snap store, which you can run and host your own snaps in, and then connect Snap up to that instead, and search and install snaps that way.
Awesome.
So this will be useful, for example, if you're maybe a device vendor and you want to make certain snaps available to your customers, maybe.
Yeah, or for any reason you don't want to use the Canonical store. If you want to just, like, for whatever reason you want to create your own store, there's a base from which you can build.
So looking at this, it looks like you can basically tell, you can tell Snap to point at a particular store. You can't, like, it's not like having apt repos where you have like a list of them and it'll find the most recent thing in all of the available packages. It's just like you say, this is the place that you look for snaps. Is that right?
I think so. It's like, or an environment moment, variable anyway. Or something, isn't it? You tell it where the snap store is. But I would imagine it may be that in the future, I mean, given that, you know, 2 weeks ago there was one snap store on the planet.
Yeah.
Now there are two. Yeah. I would imagine at some point in the future there'll be the capability for you to be able to, like, have a system which can point to multiple snap stores. That would make sense, I would imagine. Yeah.
Cool. And we spoke briefly about the Open Store a couple of shows ago. They've implemented this in the Open Store, so you can now access snaps through the Open Store.
Sweet. Should we move on to the events?
Yes, I think we'd better before we run out of time.
First up, it's EuroPython 2016. It's the largest European Python conference with over 1,200 participants, and it's the second largest in the world. If you're a programmer, student, or company interested in Python, the programming language, then this is the event to go to. It's in Bilbao, Spain, from the 17th to the 24th of July, and you can find out more at ep2016.europython.eu.
Next up, it's FOSS Talk Live, a free evening of Live Linux podcasts featuring Linux Voice, the Linux Luddites, and us.
Yay.
And it's at King's Cross. It's at King's Cross in London on Saturday, the 6th of August, which is about 1 month away now. And you can find out more at fosstalk.com.
And there is Wuthering Bytes, which, for its name alone, you should go to, because that's just awesome. It's a week-long festival of technology in the heart of the Pennines. It's actually at Hebden Bridge in West Yorkshire. And it's each day has a theme, including open source hardware, LLVM Cauldron. Don't know what that is. What, do anyone know what that is?
Something to do with
Clang. Compiler tools.
Compilers and stuff.
Oh, okay. And other things. And that's on the 2nd to the 11th of September.
Cool.
And what's the URL?
Wutheringbytes.com.
I only said that because I wanted to hear you say Wuthering. And finally, there's UberCon Europe, which is the very first European Ubuntu conference. And it's in November at Unperfect House, Essen, in Germany. Nearly said something completely different then. 18th to 20th of October. And you can find out more at ubercon.org. And that's all the events.
We love getting your feedback. So please send it to us. Even the pointlessly mean stuff makes us laugh. If it's short, tweet us on @UbuntuPodcast. If it's less short, email us on show@ubuntupodcast.org. If you'd like to discuss some of the things we talk about with other listeners, post on our shiny new subreddit at reddit.com/r/UbuntuPodcast. Or you can just leave a comment on the relevant show notes on our website, ubuntupodcast.org.
And that's all for episode 19. We'll be back next week when we'll be discussing the potential demise of 32-bit Ubuntu, and we'll bring you some command line love.
Hooray! That was all smooth as silk, wasn't it?
Almost.
Wonderful.
Oh, blimey. So what's next week? Yes, next week. I have no idea what I'm thinking.
Good.
Come back next week and find out.
Yes.
Ta-ra.
Bye. Bye.
Biscuits?